My lecture will be on the idea of adult remakes and how you can find them in literature, in the silent film area, as well as in contemporary examples, and how this development is in a way intertwined with the idea of a technological development on one hand and the idea of a generic development within pornography on the other hand. So, no? Okay. So that's what I'd like to present in a way. I'd like to disambiguate my terms, the terms of discussion in a way. Then I'd like to give you an historical example from an Austrian production company you may not familiar be with. And then I'll try to skip to more contemporary examples. And in the end, I'd like to, in a way, point off my findings and maybe we can have, in a way, a discussion. So terms. First term, may laugh now, pornography. To define pornography is a difficult and I think also a very dangerous task. To think about the possibility of a definition is nevertheless necessary for pointing to the wider context of the questions I'm going to discuss and also to show how the form and content of pornography relates to its social and historical context to the specific topic of my talk. To quote John Ellis from his essay on pornography, quote, "Not only do definitions of pornography have an inhibiting moral force to them, but as a result of their blanket definitions, adequate means of writing and portrayal of sexuality have not been developed. Pornography is difficult to discuss because there is no discourse that is analytic yet nevertheless engages the subjectivity of the individual uttering that discourse. We are caught between the personal confessions and general theoretical systematizations, mutually exclusive modes, each inadequate to the problems addressed," unquote. I do not agree with Ellis in all his points, but I'll try to be as inadequate/adequate as possible with my attempt of establishing a discourse, trying to remind us that definitions need and will work best within a context. Following Lynn Hinn's brilliant thoughts, pornography did not constitute a wholly separate and distinct category of written or visual representation before the early 19th century. If you take pornography to be the explicit depiction of sexual organs and sexual practices with the aim of arousing sexual feelings, then pornography was almost always an adjunct to something else until the middle or end of the 18th century. In early modern Europe, that is between 1500 and 1800, pornography was most often a vehicle for using the shock of sex to criticize religious and political authorities. Pornography nevertheless slowly emerged as a distinct category in the centuries between the Renaissance and the French Revolution, thanks in part to the spread of print culture itself. Pornography came into existence both as a literary and visual practice and as a category of understanding at the same time as the long-term emergence of Western modernity. It has links to the major moments in that emergence, the Renaissance, the Scientific Revolution, the Enlightenment, and the French Revolution. Writers and engravers of pornography came out of the demi-monde of heretics, freethinkers, and libertines, who made up the underside of those formative Western developments. For this reason, a historical perspective is crucial to understanding the place and function of pornography in modern culture. Pornography was not a given, it was defined over time and by the conflicts between writers, artists, and engravers on one side, and spies, policemen, clergymen, and state officials on the other. Its political and cultural meanings cannot be separated from its emergence as a category of thinking, representation, and regulation. Pornography, either literature or film, is therefore a way of political philosophy and a mode of politics as well, although sexuality is always a subject to limitations in the public discourse. Sometimes I do have the impression that pornography names mostly an argument and not a debatable thing. To quote Laura Kipnis, quote, "Sweating naked bodies and improbable sexual acrobatics are only one side of the story. The other is the way pornography holds us in the thrall of its theatrics of transgression, its dedication to crossing boundaries and violating social structures. Therefore, pornography provides a realm of transgression that is, in effect, a counter-aesthetics to dominant norms for bodies, sexualities, and desire itself." It's an archive of data about both our history as a culture and our own individual histories, our formation as selves, unquote. From this quoting of the philosophical concept of the archive as a deposit, we can easily switch to the idea of film and its permanent and ongoing politics of remaking. But let's stick for a moment, for another moment, to the terms of pornography and the pornographic film. The pornographic film is, to quote from a typical and very popular film dictionary, quote, any film made solely for sexual arousement and featuring nudity and explicit sexual acts. Such films, in their crude technique and sexual exploitation, lack any redeeming social value, to use the Supreme Court phrase, as a fact that separates them from serious films that employ sex as a part of larger thematic concerns and present the human body and lovemaking with tact and imagination, unquote. This definition, of course, is very problematic and lack of any understanding or even interest for the important social, political, and aesthetical concepts and ideas discussed within the field of pornography. Besides the aspects mentioned before, we might come back to that point later during the discussion. The next term is the blockbuster. The blockbuster can be defined, one, and first and foremost, and as an extremely expensive, generally long and lavishly made film that requires a great financial return to be profitable. Already in the 1920s and then again in the 1950s and 60s, a number of blockbusters were produced until the losses of films like Mutiny on the Bounty or Cleopatra put a first stop to this development. The blockbuster returned in the late 1970s and especially during the 1980s. During this third period of blockbusters, also a renewed idea of pornographic blockbusters were implemented, and the concept of adult remake was especially important to that idea. And the remake? Remake can be defined as a newer version of an earlier film. Three different aspects can be named for the structure of a remake. The first one would be a remake exploits the popularity of the original work. Two, a remake exploits the popularity of a property upon which the original work was based on. And three, a remake pays homage to, while updating mostly on a technological level, the original film. Especially the first two aspects are crucial for the concept of adult remakes, the hardcore remake of a blockbuster original. Nevertheless, we mustn't forget that adult remakes were always shaped and influenced the history of pornography, especially pornographic literature and the pornographic film, which is in the end as well literary based and founded. Especially the French literature of the 18th century is highly important and still influential for the implementation of pornography as a category. French literature after 75 dominated, together with the British literature from that period, the market of pornographic literature in Europe. French classical literature did not contain the term itself. Pornography is first mentioned in Retief de la Breton's Le Pornographe from 1769, but this book is dedicated to the topic of the legal regulation of prostitution, therefore related to the principal etymological meaning of the term pornography. The Encyclopédie of Diderot and d'Alembert only gives us a definition of the erotic, but not of the pornographic, although this specific period is full of pornographic writings that aim at the field of politics. The censors and the officials during that time sum up these writings under the label of philosophical writings, because both tendencies are totally intertwined and focus on the rethinking of norms and regulations. If we take a look at the published books and bibliographies done by Guillaume Apollinaire or Pascal Pire, list an enormous number of them, then most of them can be classified as remakes or even as adult remakes, a concept that can be found even before this specific period. For instance, the 16th century pornography relied heavily on classical models, including the revival of Roman poems to the god Priapus, which circulated in manuscripts from during the 15th century. In its reliance on classical themes, pornography in the 16th century was not especially innovative. Rather, it was the diffusion through print culture that marked a significant departure. And again, after the technological revolution of the print culture, the establishing of the medium film, both socially and technologically promoted the idea of remakes. Now I'd like to go to the historical example. I mentioned the films of the Austrian company Saturn. In this part of my talk, I will be looking at examples from the output of Saturn, Austria's first film production company, and placing in its context, it in context of adult remakes. Saturn, a Vienna-based company, produced a number of erotic films between 1906 and 1910, which were the first fiction film produced in a continuous manner in the Habsburg Empire. Saturn produced films with erotic content only, and that was how it was advertised in different trade publications and publishing its films in a printed catalog, very similar to the French Pathé productions, which Saturn sometimes remade in an adult manner. I'll show one of these examples later in my talk. Shows of erotic and pornographic nature were already popular in shadow theatres and in magic lantern shows, in peep shows, and later in panoramas and mechanical and animated panoptica. There is proof that in the so-called pre-cinema era, a high number of images, sketches, photographs, and or animated photographs of erotic and pornographic nature existed. The ambulance cinematography took advantage of this interest of the audience in these specific spectacles. The entrepreneurs were in a way torn between concealing the existence of their shows and advertising them. Hence, and they set about this task in a lateral manner, rather than publishing the program of the particular evening shows. What is certain is that these shows made a lot of money for the organizers. In Italy, for instance, screenings of this nature were known as Serate Nere, black evenings. In Austria and Germany, they were known as so-called Herrenabende, evenings for gentlemen, although as recent research proved, a significantly high percentage of the audience was female. Screening like this started already in 1897 by Mr. Josef Stiller, an owner of a cinema in the Viennese Prater, something very similar to Coney Island. And he was one of the most important people to establish this kind of programs. Stiller was also in a way responsible for the establishing of the term Herrenabende. He obtained three films by the French surgeon Doyen, who documented his surgical operations for educational purposes. These films also contained the depiction of nude female corpses, and they were banned in 1903 by the police of the German Empire, and according to this decision, also banned in the Habsburg Empire. Stiller still wanted to screen these films, and after a number of attempts, he was granted the permission to show them, on condition that the words "nur für Herren," for gentlemen only, were stamped on the posters. This rather dubious recreation disregards erotic or pornographic subject matter and implies that on one hand the Herrenabende arose in part out of a scientific purpose sanctioned by the police. On the other hand, this re-established a connection of medicine and pornography via the female body, something that can be found already in the early modern times and the anatomical theatres of this historical period. In Vienna, these shows and films were all the rage. Movie houses were very keen on these items, and it was not uncommon to find adverts requesting films for so-called special evenings, quote-unquote, and the already mentioned Herrenabende. Around 1907, according to the local trade press, many more cinemas were running regular adult evenings. This development was one of the reasons for the introduction of a permanent censorship in the Habsburg Empire. Initially, erotic films tended to be elusive, often leaving much to the imagination. Naturally, this was not the case with pornographic products filmed mostly by amateurs, which were distributed, for example, via brothels, often without any commercial or theatrical intentions. The Austrian-made films of Saturn lie somewhere between the tendencies of the erotic and the pornographic. The history of this company is linked with that one of its founder, Johann Schwarzer, who was trained as a photographer. After working in the field of erotic photography, Schwarzer founded his company around 1906 to cater to public wishes, supplying the greatest demand, which was for erotic movies. The films produced by this company bridged the gap between products originating in France, I already mentioned the Pathé company, and explicitly pornographic movies. In the Saturn films, the actresses are completely naked, allowing Schwarzer to offer distributors and audiences a far more explicit and desirable product than French imports, though still by his own definition, artistic, quote-unquote. Now I'd like to show you one of the very earliest examples. It's from 1906. It's called No Swimming, and it's a remake of a French original, and it's one of the first fiction film produced in Austria ever. But this was a really good example, because especially of the length of the way it was produced, and that there was something like full frontal nudity. That was something completely new to the erotic and pornographic film done by a major company. Saturn carved out a considerable niche for itself across Europe in the struggle for control of the erotic and semi-pornographic film market. Many small adverts requesting films with Viennese themes, quote-unquote, or more explicitly, films, if possible, from the Saturn Film Production Company, quote-unquote, were proof of the company's success. Schwarzer was in no doubt about the risks involved in producing and distributing his films. This is why he wrote in his catalogue that cinema owners might lose their license to project films, and in such case he would immediately sever all relationships with the indicted cinema owners. To further protect himself, he had purchasers sign a contract in which they made a commitment to only show his films before an adult audience. The company's successful run, which started with adult remakes, came to an end in 1909 because of another form of adult remake. In a confidential letter, the Habsburg consul in Tbilisi in Georgia wrote to Count von Erntal, the foreign minister of the Habsburg Empire, complaining about the showing of Austrian-made pornographic films in the Georgian capital. The consul stated that for at least a year, two cinemas in town had been showing, quote, filth the like of which I had never seen in half a century traveling every corner of the globe, unquote. He also commented that the films in question bore the logo of the Saturn Company and went on to describe that one of them depicted two monks engaged in homosexual practices. He concluded his letter by stating that it is in the interests of the Austrian film industry and terrorist development, it was imperative to avoid that what until that time had been known as Parisian themes did not in future become known only as Viennese themes. The foreign minister forwarded this memo to the Home Affairs minister, who notified the Venice Police Department. In late 1909, they raided the company's premises. The subsequent police inquiry showed that Saturn was wholly unconnected with the production of the films mentioned by the ambassador. Unfortunately, sources do not allow us to follow up on a step-by-step basis how that case developed, but we do know that on a following trial, an order was issued for the destruction of 21 Saturn films, along with all the photographs and the stock of the catalogues of the company. This ruling became effective in 1911 and can be considered a very good example for Austrian film censorship, in which political and social issues outweighed the questions of morality. I'm now going to show you another example from the Saturn Film Company, one of these 21 films which was forbidden and had to be destroyed. It was preserved in a German archive, and it's called The Power of Hypnosis. Hypnosis was also a very popular, in a way, pop science thing during the pre-cinema era, and was next to X-ray, it was the big rage, like pornographic X-ray and hypnosis. And in this film example, you can see one very, very clear cut of the film censorship authorities, because you see what might be a prostitute, and nudity is not the topic of censorship. It is when she attempts to climb on the hypnotized customer. So I hope you'll enjoy this one as well. Most of the Saturn films also, in a way, especially the ones from 1908, 1909, contain not only nudity, but also, in a way, irony dealing with this issue of eroticism and pornography. And sometimes they really try to mock even the audience they aim at. There's also an example, it's called they're showing a situation at the military and making fun of recruits in a way, and the military interdicted it after the first screening. So there was, of course, always this playing with social boundaries. And even this hypnotic dome, in a way, redefines social hierarchies with doing what she's doing. Okay. So censorship would be one of the main things in relation to Saturn film. This mentioned trial and the following order led, of course, to the closing of the Saturn company. Austrian film magazines gave prominent coverage to this story, adding that complaints against Saturn had arrived from as far afield as Berlin, Paris, London, Rome, and even Tokyo. Herrenabende were banned in Vienna from February 1910 onwards, and other regions of the empire soon followed, bringing a first end to this important phase of filmmaking in Austria. Now I'd like to go to the contemporary examples, and because you saw a few moving images yesterday, I decided to show you a few slides from different contemporary examples. For presenting and then hopefully discussing these contemporary examples in the frame I've given before, I'd like to contextualize this development of porn in the development of porn film in the 80s and 90s, following the history of the genre as outlined by David Flint. The porn industry had finally consolidated its position in the beginning of the 80s, shortly before the establishing of home videos. When home video first started to take off, it was adult films that led the way. In fact, adult movies were also responsible for breaking the home video market, especially in the US. This development led to the establishing of new conditions for production of porn, because it was possible to make more money with tapes than with expensive 35mm prints in the theaters. As video increased in popularity, adult theater began to suffer. There was a huge trend towards video productions, and as video took over, so the budgets plummeted. It became harder and harder for producers and directors to find the money to make a feature film, the studios preferring the low-cost, high-profit appeal of video quickies. By 1986, the adult feature film seemed dead and gone. The average budget for a film had plummeted to as little as $10,000, and the typical shooting time down to 2 days. Quality and ambition vanished almost entirely. So besides political threats from the left and the right and the fear of diseases, there was also the danger of losing the gained position, although the level of output still increased and brought the possibility of legal shoot pornographic films in California, that's this case of Hal Friedman, and the establishing of major production studios like Caballero, Carl Wister, VCA Labs, or even Vivid Video. The end of the conservative era in 1992 seemed like an end to a repressive era as well. Pornographers could finally start to aim at a more discerning audience. In fact, as the decade has progressed, sexual entertainment has become more and more fashionable. It no longer seemed cool to attack porn full stop. Criticism could still aim at sleazy, sexist pornography, but adult entertainment per se was no longer considered inherently offensive. And whilst the majority of productions remained cheap, a considerable number of high-end, first-rate productions have begun to appear. The return to 35mm prints for shooting and distribution already started in 1989 with Andrew Blake's Night Trips. His following films, House of Dreams and Hidden Obsessions, both from 1990, opened the field for so-called prestige porn, which means hi-fi stereo soundtracks, costuming, gorgeous performance, and Hollywood production values. Blake influenced a number of other directors, especially the former CNN director Michael Ninn, who gave his debut with Black Orchid in 1993. His film Sex, 1995, Latex, 1995, which was mentioned yesterday, I guess, and finally Shock from 1996, followed shortly afterwards. Both Blake and Ninn used computer-aided special effects with their high-definition products and founded a movement which we may refer to as New Porn Generation. For the first time, the video labels began to crave prestige projects and were willing to spend more in order to improve their public image and reach the wider audience. This renewing of formal concepts like the return of filmic material also helped establishing a new generation of adult remakes, which I refer, to put it in Genetian terms, as hypertext on various levels on their hypertext, the blockbuster originals. I'd like only to mention a few from the very rich variety of examples the 90s decade saw remakes, from the Indiana Jones series to the two parts of Penetrator, from Apocalypse Climax to Frankenpenis, from Cyrano de Bergerac to Edward Penis Hands. Especially interesting are the works, for my opinion, of John Leslie, a former porn actor. He did Curse of the Catwoman, which is inspired by the Paul Schrader Cat People, and Chameleons, based on Ridley Scott's The Hunger. Then there are the works of Buck Adams. He did not only the first 70mm porn called Nightclub, but he's probably best known for his Babe Watch series, the first adult remake of a TV show, and the works of Philip Noir. There's Passenger 69, a spoof of James Bond films, and I think he's better known for The Passion, a more or less adult adaptation of Goethe's Faust. All these films, among others, led to an ongoing remaking of blockbusters in porn industry. To give you a more or less idea of what this conception of hypertext look in the end, I've chosen three contemporary examples I'd like to present. There is Star Wars. You have the opening scene. This would be Star Wars. This would be Porn Wars. Then we have a dialogue next to window between two major protagonists, which appear then again later in the film. You have a similar scene in Porn Wars. Then,
please go back to the.
Okay, so that everybody can. So Star Wars writing Porn Wars. Star Wars scene at the window, Porn Wars. Then we do have the defeat of the young Jedi. Here we do have the defeat of the young Jodi. Which is, I think this really gives us this impression of something. Then we have a dueling scene from Star Wars. We do have a dueling scene from Porn Wars. I think we saw this one also yesterday. Pirates of the Caribbean. Well, there's this very good remake, Pirates. There we do have, in a way, a battle scene. We do have this in Pirates as well. And also in the narrative context, on the right position of the narrative developing. Then we do have, in a way, the depiction of major protagonists. We do have this as well in Pirates. Then the establishing of Keira Knightley in Pirates of the Caribbean, her counterpart in Pirates. We can find a similar, my last example would be Sin City and Sex City. We have the opening scene, which is very, very famous because it made all the other actors sign up their contracts for participating in Sin City. We have to have a similar opening scene in Sex City. We do have the establishing of Marv, one of the major protagonists, during a fight in Sin City. We have it similar in Sex City. There's, of course, a villain in the narrative in Sin City. We do have a similar thing in Sex City. Conclusions. Brick productions are on the rise. Within the subgenre of adult remakes, big production productions are still on the rise. Pirates got, for the genre of pornographic film, a very high budget, and recent examples like Excalibur show us that the industry is willing to go on with this way of production and remake. The conventions of genre of the different genres are preserved. These adult remakes and similar adult remakes are stable within the genre conventions of the original. Although there are, of course, examples of spoof, almost all the contemporary productions stay within the genre boundaries of the original. Porn Wars, for instance, is still science fiction. Sex City is still film noir, and so on. Formal and narrative strategies of the original are preserved. Within the subgenre of adult remakes, the formal and narrative strategies of the original are preserved. If we take a look at the set design, the costumes, and so on, there's always at least the wish traceable to preserve important parts of the original. Sometimes, of course, it will be necessary to alter the length of the film, to cut down the narrative, to find time and space for all the hardcore action like in Pirates, or to stretch the given time of the original like it was done with Sex City. In the end, a trilogy was necessary to have enough time and space for both sex and most parts of the original narrative. My last finding is the possible loss of the subversive potential of pornography. If there's, for instance, no irony in the original, then there's no irony in the adult remake, like in Porn Wars. if there's something like human original, then you can always find in something like this Inderdahl remake, like in Pirage, which isn't only a very well done remake, but also a very funny one. Maybe the individual private productions equipped with the necessary technological tools will continue to use the subversive potential of pornography instead of the high-end productions. At the end of my talk, and maybe to go into discussion, I'd like to quote Laura Kipnis again. Quote, "Pornography grabs us and doesn't let go. Whether you're revolved or enticed, shocked or titillated, these are flip sides of the same response, an intense, visceral engagement with what pornography has to say. And pornography has quite a lot to say. Pornography should interest us because it's intensely and relentlessly about us. It involves the roots of our culture and the deepest corners of the self. It's not just friction and naked bodies. Pornography has eloquence, it has meaning, it has ideas." Unquote. Thanks for your attention.
So in looking at films for your talk, did you also look at adaptations of non-blockbusters? Because I know there's a whole genre of Shakespeare porn, The Taming of the Screw, A Midsummer mm-hmm. Night's Cream. Have you seen any of those? Do you have any thoughts on them?
I only know a few examples, but I wouldn't say that Shakespeare isn't blockbuster. I think it's very naturally, in a way, that there's also a porn remake of Shakespeare, because what's Shakespeare about? Shakespeare is about insanity, madness, love, sexuality, war, everything that can happen to us, in a way. And, of course, pornography, which is also so intertwined what human beings are about, in a way, and how our culture is defined, and so on. So I think it's very logical, in a way, to tend to remake also things which deal with very, very big ideas. I only know a few of these examples, but maybe you can give me a few hints afterwards.
Sort of following up to that, can you imagine a film or story genre that would not be remade into a porn movie? Like, I can imagine maybe a very focused, like, documentary, perhaps, but I can't... I don't know if you can think of any.
Maybe a documentary, but I'm not sure even about that, so... there's an adult remake even of adult remakes. So that's there's a generic process going on. And I think no genre is in a way safe.
Well, you mentioned some of the changes in media, the rise of video, and then the return of high-quality filmmaking as part of the things leading to this new wave of remakes. Would you perhaps comment on also, particularly after the development of the internet, the rise of slash fiction, which of course starts in fandom, science fiction fandom in the 70s, but then kind of explodes with the internet?
I think this development is very close what happened to every sequential narrative storytelling, in a way. Like, think of the media history of comics, which I think is very close to what the example you mentioned, because very soon in the history of comics, we do have the 8-pager. So, yeah. Yeah, stuff like that. There's 8 pages, like then Poppy and Olive going on really hard. So I think that... That fan fiction, in a way, will always also exploit, also in a positive way, the given material. And I think that especially I'm very happy that you mentioned science fiction, because I think that the idea of the fantastic is something very important to society, because look at the fantastic film or the fantastic literature or the fantastic porn, in a way, of a society, and it says you very, very clearly what are the concerns of the society, the fears, all these things. So I think it's no surprise that out of the science fiction concept, this kind of remake arose out of it.
Yeah, it's in a way a little bit sad that we couldn't see longer clips of these new examples, because I would be interested, also because your last quote claimed that there is really a lot of potential in porn film. And actually, to be honest, I haven't seen it so far, so maybe you could have provided some proof to this. But also, what I would have been very interested in is there is a what are remakes about, and what is fan culture about? I mean, this is not fan culture, said they are high-end products, but still they are fed by the very knowledge about fan culture. And one of the most important and most interesting examples of early fan culture was the reception of Star Trek as an underlying homosexual subtext. And there are, of course, clips on YouTube to be found by now showing Spock and Kirk, but only original cuts and cut together in a way that you can grab this subtext with your very hands. And, of course, based on written fiction, that was the first step in this direction. And so one would also wonder if there is a hidden sexual subtext, like in Star Trek or in Pirates, that is actually really brought forward by these porn productions, or if it's just adding genitals to the narrative already.
Yeah, I gave proof of all these things. Due to the schedule, I showed you the examples that you're not familiar with. So I think you all have seen Pirates. So in a way, that wouldn't make that much sense. But there's proof. That's something completely different than the examples. Of course, it's not fan culture. This is blockbuster remaking. Yeah, and I think it's not just adding genitals to it. That might be valid to a few examples, but yeah, I think Pirates is a very good example, because even there's something like an erotic tension in the original given, and I think that's something they really pinpoint to, and they really use this potential of this erotic tension already given in the original films.
Okay, last one, really last one.
Okay. In your conclusions, you mentioned that you see some of this subversive potential, some of the subversive material is being replaced in these remakes. I'm curious what exactly you mean by that. Are you saying that they're replacing some of the subversive ideas with outright sex, or are you saying that the sex itself is more of a conventional idea and they're replacing some of the more socially subversive ideas by just turning it into sex, which is kind of conventional and we all know people having sex, etc.?
No, I think that within the adult remakes I showed, and this selection of examples, I think that there's only some kind of using the subversive potential. Not only, you can say, okay, adult remake is always in a way using the subversive potential, but besides that point that it's remaking a blockbuster, well-established, using a huge marketing budget and so on, I think the blockbuster, adult remake blockbuster uses irony only when it's given in the original. So it's in a way stays in the genre boundaries. Then there's, of course, this use of irony and questioning social topics in a completely different manner as well.